You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 1 October, we've got local September PMI data due 11 a.m. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Kieran Whitten from Anchor. We touch on that Renogen quarterly update and a SPAR 47-week update ahead of their closed period. Anthony Clark on local small caps. They've been running recently as there's still value. And Rudy Bodenstein from Stanhage Fleming, the value of offshore trusts. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. While 22% of Discovery members have taken money out under two-pot, many for funds to cover expenses. Low-income claimants at 38% and high-income at 4%. But yo, 22%. Business Day, Netcare expects revenue boost after improved second half. Private healthcare provider on track to meet its full-year guidance and strategic project goals. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P up 0.4%, NASDAQ a quarter of a percent higher. Easter's mostly green, the exception is Sydney, down a quarter of a percent. We got Tokyo up 1.5%, Hong Kong up 2.4%, and Tencent 1.6% higher. Commodities, red. Gold, 2,658. Brent, 7,183. Platinum, 994. Palladium, $1,001 an ounce. Rand is 17.29. Bitcoin, 63,500. Top 40 opening call, a green open, but 50 points, a little under 0.1% higher.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the early morning time. Renogen quarterly update came out yesterday. I mean, there's really, I suppose, two parts to it. One is the LNG. The other is the helium and ultimately getting helium to market. Your take on it. There's been a lot of thoughts out there around Renogen. I suppose they're moving forward, perhaps just slower than certainly they would have liked. And I suspect maybe the market as well.
Good morning, Simon. Good morning to all the listeners. And I think you've definitely hit the nail on the head there. I was a bit disappointed by the market reaction yesterday. It was down slightly, but there were no significant new details, like you've said. I mean, the helium plant is now fully operational. They've been producing helium for about 2 months, but this is with disruptions, but still no helium brought to market for sale. And then the LNG production, of course, remains stable, which is positive, but largely the sideshow. But Simon, I think what's around the office, what most of the chat has been is about this NASDAQ listing that they are planning, what price they can list on the NASDAQ, and then ultimately the amount of funding that Renogen is going to get from this listing that will enable them to ramp up to phase two. Of helium production, but with the share price at around 10 Rand locally, it's tough to see how they're going to get to their proposed 45 Rand in the US. And Renogen's argument is that the South African investing market is just not sophisticated enough to really see the full value that they are placing on these helium reserves. And they are confident that they can list at a premium on the NASDAQ, but it's a bit of a catch-22 because they need positive sentiment to lift the share price that will make this 45 Rand listing more likely. But if this if the gap to the 45 Rand remains too large and they list far below that price on the NASDAQ, it's likely that they are going to dilute shareholders. And that is what the market's nervous of and, in fact, pricing in. So it's a story where positive sentiment here in South Africa will beget a higher listing price in the US, which, of course, will then minimize the risk of dilution. But there's just no confidence really at the moment. And I think bullish and bearish investors are loaded up on both sides. And a catalyst, I think, we're getting to a catalyst. And they speak of a potential February listing, but they just need to keep putting some runs on the board here, keep the positive headlines coming, stop shutting down operations, and basically just have a turnaround and have a run of positive operational momentum, and then start selling helium. And then we will see what will happen after that.
I take your point. I mean, start selling some helium because I like your point. There's that catch 22 with the NASDAQ listing, but I think the biggie, Babs, I mean, sell some helium. That'll get people interesting. We had a SPA trading update yesterday, the 47 weeks to what, 23 of August. I mean, it's a tough environment. They have got their problems in Poland. They're going to be exiting that. Your take on the SPA update?
Yeah, so SPAR has been hampered by missteps, we could say, over the years, due to largely the countries they've been operating in, the European portfolio, and obviously the failed SAP implementation. And this performance was weaker than expected on the sales line, but they do stress in their commentary that they're making progress on their short-term goals. They seem quite confident on this. Mm. And then, yeah, like we've said, the European portfolio is struggling a bit. The market remains tough, particularly in Switzerland and Poland. And they also cited macro uncertainty in the UK, and which affects Ireland as well. But they are reviewing this European portfolio, which I think is one of the stories around SPA at the moment. As you've said, they're gonna sell this Poland business. That seems to be going ahead. And then I think the Switzerland sale of their business there is looking likely as well, which will further de-gear their balance sheet. Locally, they're saying they're making progress with the ERP system, and they are confident that they can expand operating profits, the margins there, by more than the market is pricing in. This could lead to quite a big valuation. But overall, we actually think this is one of the more interesting stories in South Africa, and we would urge people to not get out of these retailers too early. Mm-hmm. And I think SPA, you know, it's had a few years of bad news priced in, and it is being valued on depressed earnings at the moment. So as far as actually a story that we still like at the moment, pretty confident going forward, especially with the way that South Africa is going at the moment.
Yeah, I take your point. An improved consumer should certainly help in that regard as well. We'll leave it there. That's Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Appreciate the early morning time. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Anthony Clark. You, of course, find him on the Twitters, Small Talk Daily. Anthony, appreciate the time. I was going through charts, small cap index, mid cap index. I mean, we know that the top 40 is at highs, but these smaller mid cap, particularly the small cap, man, they have been flying.
Yeah, hi, Simon. Good to hear from you again. And it's been quite a while since we can say that the small to mid cap market is currently back in favor. And as you correctly say, you know, year to date, the small cap index is up roughly 25% and the mid cap index roughly about 19%. But it's all a tale of two halves. I mean, it was only from June the 10th when the indices really started to move after the formation of the Government of National Unity and then interest in the sector suddenly started coming back with abandon. And since then, it's been a weight of the races.
It has been. And I mean, we often refer to the mid and small as I mean, they're SA Inc. Now, that's not always completely true, but a lot of them are highly focused on the local economy and hence the June 10 trigger.
Absolutely. I think your listeners will probably know that most of the companies below the Aussie 40 tend to be the domestic focused stocks, the consumer stocks, the food stocks, the industrial stocks, where they have a much more localized flavor. And as such, the change of political dispensation and the hope for interest rate cuts and economic growth have filtered through. And in many cases, I've seen stocks rise exponentially in the last couple of months. You know, some of the road building and construction stocks are up 50, 60, 70, 80%. And I think the enthusiasm we have seen in the sector is only now starting to permeate into the wider market. And I don't think it has been seen yet by the internationals coming in to buy the sector.
I'd say, I mean, internationals, I mean, I think even, I mean, there's obviously some local fund managers, but I mean, I think even them are behind the curve in this, because even with this run, the stocks are in many cases not cheap. I mean, many of them started on mid-single digit PEs, and in some case, you know, dividend yields of around 10%.
Yeah, I've just come back from presenting to a major institutional client. And we were discussing this very fact that despite some heady runs in some of the what we would call the better quality mid-cap stocks, you know, the underlying ratings, despite the substantial move in share prices in the last 3 or 4 months, they're not on hugely demanding prices. You know, those that can remember the last great small-cap boom, as I can, probably, oh God, nearly a decade ago, you know, the ratings have been unwinding for many, many years. When I first started covering mid-caps in the mid-1990s, the average PE of a good quality small to mid-cap stocks was in the mid to high teens. And here we are a few months ago, before the election, you could pick up some really good stocks, as you say, in low single digits.
And some of them, and CMH is one that you were mentioning on the Twitters recently. I hold it. I've held it for a number of years. Had a what some would say was a disappointing update. Truthfully, it's an update we should have seen coming because of the period it was covering. This really is about the forward guidance and the next year or two, or heck, if this all holds. I mean, we could have 4 years of government and national unity and a viable economy.
Yeah, CMH is a good example. You know, they had a February year end. So the 6 months which came out recently was for the period from March to August. Now, we all know in that period we had political uncertainty. We had a very soft, lackluster economy as nobody really knew where we were going. You know, if you're uncertain about the political nature of the election, would you really want to go out and spend money on a high-value piece of consumer goods like a car? Mm. The answer probably is no. You'd wait and see what was going on. Also, car rental is a significant proportion of CMH's earnings. It was 50% in the last full year. We were in winter. We have the wettest, dampest, coldest winter on Cape record. You know, why would you come to this country in a miserable period of weather? And of course, internationally, we have the Olympics, perhaps drawing consumers away. And I think going forward, as consumers hopefully start seeing a bit more money in their pockets, and a feel-good factor comes through, CMH, particularly in the tourist season ahead of us, should do a lot better in the second half into 2025.
And I'm thinking, I mean, you know, there's a fair bit, and you cover a lot around the agri-food producers as well. They've got a range challenges, but some like CARP or KOLs, they call themselves now, they've got the stores, they've got the fuel, that kind of immunes them. But I always think, if you were a manager or a CEO of a small cap stock in the last decade, it has been immensely tough. You give them a little bit of power, you give them a little bit of GDP growth, a little bit of consumer spending, the future earnings are going to be, in some cases, spectacular.
Yeah, let's not forget that business people in this country are fairly resilient. They've lived through some extremely challenging and turbulent times going back for many, many decades. And I think there's one thing that a small to mid-cap CEO tends to know is how to run a small business extremely well in difficult times. They know how to eke out the profit, eke out the margin, and trim costs where necessary. So hopefully any touch point of economic growth, be it GDP growth, employment growth, and falling interest rates, should see many of your stocks perform exceptionally well. And we've started seeing that now in terms of the share prices, but not necessarily in terms of earnings. So I think some of the stocks may be running ahead of themselves, mm-hmm. but by the time the earnings come through, you will not be able to buy these stocks because there'll be no strip lying around.
Yeah, but that's a great point. And that is the case. They're small caps for a reason. And when they get bought, I mean, I don't know about you, but I tend to hold them. And I think there's often a lower free float, which means, you know, because directors and the like and a few institutions, suddenly scrip gets hard to get hold of. And I mean, I've seen it and I remember the sort of 04 to 07 LTX listing boom. Things can suddenly go vertical in a hurry. They can go almost like what China's done in the last week.
Well, again, some examples. Raubex, the construction company, at one point this year was up nearly 100% from the start of the year. even Premier Foods, the country's largest milling and baking company, they're up year to date 72%. They were significantly higher. They were at 119 last week. So if you suddenly catch a trend and you're a stock in a certain segment that the market suddenly cottons onto, as you can say, you can go vertical.
Yeah, and you don't want to be chasing at that point. We leave it there. Anthony Clark, as always, you find them on the Twitters, Small Talk Daily. Appreciate the time.
And our poll today is just around that on both Twitter and LinkedIn. Small caps, I mean, certainly, we've seen some good valuations. We're seeing stocks that have run to a degree. The question is, are you buying or holding at this point in the small cap rally? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Rudy Bordenstein. He's Stonehage Fleming, Jersey partner and senior trustee. Really appreciate the time today. Trusts, my sense, to a degree, they've kind of ebbed and flowed over the decades. But as a tool for succession planning, for estate planning, they really have stood the test of time. They still work and do what folks need them to do who are incorporating trusts.
Hi, Simon. Yes, I think, or I know, trusts are a tried and tested vehicle, especially in the offshore world where we use English law trusts. Mm-hmm. That's got absolute certainty of interpretation, of legal interpretation of trust clauses. And mostly certainty on tax treatment for beneficiaries as well as settlers. I mean, they remain a very robust vehicle to protect assets against wealth erosion, but also against abuse by beneficiaries who get access to large amounts of wealth.
I take your point on that last one. Jersey and Switzerland, are they still generally considered sort of top destinations?
From our perspective, yes. Jersey is the flagship of our offshore offering. You know, we've got a very strong South African offering locally in South Africa. But in Jersey, we have our flagship. Jersey received a very good report from Moneyval during our last inspection, end of 2023. And Switzerland obviously bring the Swiss sophistication to financial transactions. So we would consider those two to be our main jurisdictions, yes.
What about Mauritius, which my sense is maybe a bit of an up-and-coming destination? There is, of course, proximity if required. Is Mauritius on the global radar much?
Yes, I think Mauritius plays a very important role, especially where you have commercial structures where you need to access double tax agreements. It is a very good jurisdiction for Africa, for cross-border transactions. And in that sense, I think it will go from strength to strength as it develops its offering, yes.
When putting together trusts, and I think sometimes it seems they're almost maybe a little bit overly complicated. My sense is that, as with many things, probably simplicity is actually the better route. Keeping things simple just makes for better trust and better process, particularly once you're gone and the whole process is around that estate succession family planning.
I would fully agree with that sentiment, Simon. We always take the approach that we try to keep things simple, compliant, and to deliver what it was intended to deliver. So layering of structures is certainly not the best way to go unless it adds a very specific benefit to the outcome.
And these really are, I mean, I said up front, these are about estate planning. This is around intergenerational wealth. They are long-term vehicles, and they really need to be designed and structured with that in mind. This is something that should, I mean, in an ideal world, will work across generations.
Exactly. And a trust should always be set up with that in mind. We're fortunate that we have the lived experience of ourselves as well as our clients, where wealth is now made available to third and fourth generations after the wealth creator. And the trust just remains the best vehicle to achieve that, yes.
We've spoken around them. You mentioned that they're a good vehicle. We mentioned they can be an important component around that estate planning. They've also got benefits, for example, the diversification of currency holdings. They've got access to global investments. They're more than just a estate planning vehicle. They really do have significant other benefits to built in as well.
Exactly. And they are completely independent from the settlor, because the settlor forego his right to the assets settled on the trust. So therefore, it does give you that access once you have authorized funds exported from South Africa to access the complete investment universe through the trust.
We leave it there. It's Rudy Budenstein. He's Stonehedge Fleming, Jersey Partner and Senior Trustee. Appreciate the time today. That's it for today. We were chatting with Jason Swartz yesterday from Old Mutual Investment Group. We were talking around foreigners buying local stocks. They've been buying our bonds, but so far they haven't been buying our local stocks. We asked what will be the trigger. Just under half each were saying either major reforms needed or a stable government. We've got the stable government so far, but it's only 100 days and that GNU can be noisy. Rest was split between we need either lower valuations or perhaps even higher ones. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Two pot, done wrong.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now. On the Money.